proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the NewsHour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. We are with Andrew Yang. He is a 2020 presidential contender and recently met with the Asian Latino Coalition of Iowa, and it was a packed house. Mr. Yang, welcome back to the Business News Hour. This is the third time you've been with us. Great to have you.
Always a pleasure. Great to see you again.
If we don't measure, we were talking about GDP. And if we don't measure America's success by its GDP, what should we be measuring our nation's success by?
Well, we should measure it by how we're doing. We should measure it by things that we'd actually be excited about when we get up in the morning, because virtually no American gets pumped up about GDP. Whereas if I were to say that we're getting stronger, healthier, mentally healthier, our kids are doing better, our air and water are cleaner, most Americans would get very excited about that. And GDP, it's an important measure and we'll continue to use it. But GDP is going to lead us off a cliff, because even now GDP is at record highs while our life expectancy has been declining for the last 3 years due to surges in deaths of despair, primarily drug overdoses and suicides. And as someone who's run a business, and anyone listening to this can relate, if you're a business and you have the wrong measurements, then you're never going to make progress. Even the inventor of GDP 100 years ago said this is a terrible measurement for national well-being. So we need to listen to his words now, 100 years later.
So we're taking a look at more human aspects. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, and we need to. And one of the examples I use is that self-driving cars and trucks will be tremendous for GDP, but they'll be very bad for the 3.5 million Americans who drive a truck for a living, including tens of thousands right here in Iowa. So GDP would lead us in one direction, and we have to be very conscious that that direction is not going to be a universal good for many Americans.
In your book, you talk about that at length. The book is called The War on Normal Americans. You speak to the 500,000 or so truck drivers that are going to be out of jobs in the future because of self-driving cars. If that does happen, if that does evolve into that, what are we going to do with 500,000 or more individuals who are truck drivers? What do? Retrain them? Do we give them new skills? What's going to happen? Because that many people out of jobs, and exponentially that number could grow, that's a lot of folks without a future.
Well, we're there right now. America's labor force participation rate is at 63%, the same levels as Costa Rica and El Salvador. And more Americans are having a hard time finding paths forward, particularly men of a certain background. And so these 500,000 or so, could be more. I mean, again, we're talking about a population of 3.5 million truck drivers, so 500,000 could be conservative. The question is, what will the future hold for them? And unfortunately, retraining doesn't work by the numbers. The success rates of retraining programs for manufacturing workers were about 0 to 15%. And if you go to Iowa 80, the truck stop in Davenport, and look around and say, hey, who wants to be retrained as a logistics manager or a coder, they'd be more likely to punch you in the face than to sign up. So we have to get real. Retraining is more or less a fantasy that irresponsible politicians peddle to make it seem like we're doing something, when if you follow up, the numbers just don't back it up.
And so what do we do?
What we do is we first start spreading the bounty, the gains from the approximately $168 billion a year we'll save from automating away truck driving to the truck drivers. Right now, there's no mechanism to do that. My plan would put $1,000 a month in their hands immediately and then appoint a transition official to take some of that $168 billion and put it in the hands of those who are displaced. Now, the goal is to try and create many paths forward for different types of workers. It's not just truck drivers. It's going to be cashiers and call center workers.
You even talk about physicians.
Well, physicians have a very powerful lobby, so they'll be among the last to go. But the numbers already show that AI can outperform the average radiologist in identifying tumors on a film. AI can outperform experienced lawyers in contract editing to a higher degree of both accuracy and speed. So this is coming for us all. It's not just drivers and retail clerks. It's also accountants and radiologists. We need to get our heads up to figure this out together. And if you don't have the right measurements, then you'll never make progress because you just look up and say, well, things must be going okay because GDP is going up. And then you ignore the rot in our labor market. You ignore declining labor force participation. You ignore record levels of disability. You ignore social disintegration that accompanies the loss of jobs in many of these communities.
We are with Andrew Yang, ladies and gentlemen, talking about the future of America. He is a 2020 presidential candidate. You have a plan to cut 20% of the defense spending budget and then reallocate those funds to an army of individuals who are going to be working on infrastructure here in the United States. Sounds a lot like, if you'll allow me to go back in history a little bit, like Roosevelt's Civilian Conservation Corps or the W. Work Progress Administration. Is that similar?
I looked at the historical programs that we implemented during the Great Depression, during the New Deal, and it is similar in some respects. But if you look up at our military defense budget, we're spending $750 billion a year. And the question is, how can we continue to employ large numbers of people in ways that are more economically productive? Our infrastructure is crumbling beneath our feet. Engineers give us a D and have put the bill at properly modernizing our infrastructure at approximately $4 trillion. I'm heading next week to Detroit for the next debate. I've been to Detroit every year for the last 9 years, and there are tens of thousands of derelict buildings in Detroit that no one has the money to properly tear down. That's not just a Detroit problem. That's happening throughout the Midwest. Communities don't have the resources to properly demolish these buildings, and it leads to urban blight. This is going to be a problem for the 30% of malls that are shutting down, too, because if you've ever been near a ghost mall, it becomes a giant value sinkhole where no one wants to go near the place. The parking lot is eerie. It seems like it becomes a haven for crime and bad actions. So these are the problems that we're facing right now, and it's un-American, in my opinion, just to throw our hands up and say, well, I guess Detroit has tens of thousands of derelict buildings. What are you going to do? I mean, you know, you need to put ourselves to work. We need to solve the problems of this era. And to me, it makes sense to put our resources to actually overhauling our infrastructure in a way that also creates tens, even hundreds of thousands of jobs.
What about immigration? That is a call that continues to resonate across the United States. The current administration likes to use this as a wedge issue. There are still calls for protection of our border. But using, I guess, 7th century ideas like walls may not be the best way to do that, to secure borders. What about immigration and border security with an Andrew Yang presidency?
When I looked at our border issues, a lot of it is that we're not effectively implementing the policies we have in place. There's a massive shortage of not just facilities, but also case managers and immigration officers and asylum judges. So we need to put the proper measures so that our policies as they're written on the books actually get enacted in real life. That's one reason why we have these horrific conditions and these overcrowded facilities. There are hundreds of unfilled job openings at the border right now because that service doesn't pay that much and people don't really want to live on the border, so it's hard to hire. So these are the basic mechanics of enforcing and implementing our policies on the books. And under my administration, we would put the proper resources in place and come clean. Say, look, right now the problem is that we don't have the facilities, we don't have the personnel, so we have to provide those if we're going to have a policy that actually reflects our values. But I'm pro the fact that immigrants generally make our economy stronger and more dynamic. My parents immigrated here, and my father generated 69 U.S. patents for GE and IBM, two great American companies. To me, immigrants are being scapegoated for problems that they have nothing to do with, particularly as the numbers show that automation is responsible for 80% of job loss. And if you go to a factory in Michigan or Ohio, it's much more likely to be wall-to-wall robot arms than it will be wall-to-wall immigrants.
Andrew Yang, ladies and gentlemen, a final question, if I might. I heard you tonight in front of the Iowa Asian Latino Coalition talking about your idea of $1,000 dividend as a benefit, and this is really interesting. I hadn't thought of this before, as a benefit to union members. And also, you talked about how the stress of not being able to pay bills is really a detriment to individuals' thinking capacity. Can you flesh those two things out for us?
Well, if you can't pay your bills, then your bandwidth is always consumed by your making time-money trade-offs. If I spend another couple hours here, I can save myself $12. If I put off that car repair, maybe I can save this much money for this month. And so that's where your thinking goes. And so you're not able to think as clearly about other things. And studies bear this out, where an inability to pay one's bills has the functional impact of decreasing your IQ by 13 points, or one standard deviation. So we're making our population one standard deviation less reasonable, less optimistic, less rational, by putting this boot on everyone's throats where they're afraid of paying their bills next month. 78% of us are living paycheck to paycheck. Almost half can't afford an unexpected $400 bill. That's one of the transformative impacts of a $1,000 dividend. And people are listening to this. I'm imagining you're like me, where you run a company and you're always making this trade-off between abundance and opportunity and scarcity. You're like, hey, should I make this hire? Should I make this investment? Do I invest in this marketing? And where do I save money? Like, you know, where do I need to be spending money on that initiative? It's a constant trade-off, and I get it. And we know in good times, when you operate from abundance, that's when really good things happen. Unfortunately, most Americans are not in that mindset at all. They're in a mindset of just lurching forward, trying to pay their bills. And it's making it much, much harder for us to solve problems.
Let me go back to that question again about union membership. As you well know, union membership is down significantly from its heyday back in the 50s and the 60s. We were talking about truckers just a moment ago, and 13% of truckers are organized with some kind of a union. And that has had, in many economists' point of view, a detrimental effect on the overall economy and the way of life of Americans, because we take a look at the benefits and also the loss of income from unionized protection. How does the guaranteed benefit, or the $1,000 a month, assist in union organization?
It makes workers much harder to push around or exploit if management knows that they could go home and survive on $1,000 a month, at least for some period of time. The studies you've seen are dead on, where unions have a profound effect on worker benefits, worker compensation. And because unions have been decimated over the last number of years, the share of economic gains going to workers has diminished accordingly. So we need to make that right through a dividend that will put resources directly into people's hands, and then that has the effect of also making those workers much harder to systematically exploit or push around.
I appreciate your time, Mr. Yang. Thank you so very much for visiting with us again. Say hello to your wife and your two kids. I understand that one has just had their first lesson in martial arts. Yeah,
yeah, we start them young in the Yang household. It's great to see you, and love small businesses. Imagine your businesses if everyone was getting an extra $1,000 a month. That's what we have to make happen, because small businesses are getting crushed under the boot of the mega conglomerates. I know it. You know it. Let's do something about it.
Once again, that was Andrew Yang, a 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful, and we will have links to Mr. Yang's website up on our radio blog. Well, that about wraps it up for another broadcast day. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us associated with the Business News Hour, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing, even though he's on Ragbri right now, falls to Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease, and the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett, exclusively for the Business News Hour. For all those folks, and for Andrew Yang, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.